The latest news and analysis is brought to you every Monday to Thursday.
Live
in the Israel Update with Anthony Reich, only on Chai FM.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you, Howard. Even before we jump into our topics, just two quick snippets. First of all, of course, you spoke about the Ethiopian Airlines disaster. Two Israelis were killed in that particular accident. So one of the names has already been released. So a lot of attention. Of course, Israelis do like to fly with Ethiopian Airlines for various reasons. So there is attention towards that as well. The other thing I just wanted to say before we jump in is that the wife of President Ruby Rivlin, Nachama Rivlin, has actually undergone a lung transplant operation this week. And we understand that she is recovering. She is speaking to people. She is, although she's still being sedated, she is seems to be moving in the right direction. She suffers from pulmonary fibrosis and interestingly managed to receive a lung from a youth who died in a diving accident in Eilat over the weekend. That in itself is an interesting story. But anyway, we wish Nachama Rivlin a refuah shlema, that she will recover from her transplant and that she will be well to continue to serve as the wife of our president.
Absolutely right. Time is 7:47. Anthony Reich, Jordan's King Abdullah has been in Washington and met with U.S. peace team. What do we know about, what are the main reports coming out about this meeting?
Well, we know that the peace team actually went to meet the king rather than the king going to meet the peace team. In other words, we understand that the 45-minute meeting that took place was actually at the Jordanian ambassador's residence in Washington rather than King Abdullah going to the White House or going along to any of the U.S. administration offices for the meeting. We understand that the meeting was held with Jason Greenblatt and, of course, Jared Kushner in attendance, where they had the opportunity to discuss this much-touted peace that peace proposal that the U.S. Administration, we understand, is still drawing up. We haven't heard exactly what it's going to be. There's been a lot of speculation about it, but clearly they were discussing this with King Abdullah. The fact that it was a 45-minute meeting says to me that it was kind of just matter of fact. In other words, it doesn't seem like there was a huge amount of substance. I think it was just planned to be 45 minutes, and that's what it was. We do know that the king will be representing the Palestinian position on a few subjects, particularly the status of Jerusalem. The king, of course, is the head of the Waqf, the head of the religious council that rules over the Muslim holy sites in Jerusalem. He inherited that position from his late father, King Hussein. And of course, it is the King of Jordan who retains that position as head of the Waqf, and he has a lot of interest, therefore, in representing Muslim interests towards the Israeli government and responding to various things that the Israeli government may do in Jerusalem, and of course, anything that the U.S. peace proposal may come up with in terms of how to divide up Jerusalem and what sort of access Muslims might have to their holy sites in Jerusalem after any peace arrangement is implemented. We all know that since the 1967 war, when Jerusalem was united by the Israeli government, Muslims have had access to all of their holy sites under the arrangement that was entered into with the Israeli government. And of course, this was an entirely different arrangement than the one that persisted before the 1967 war, when Jews were not allowed access to the holiest of holy sites in our religion, being the Kotel, the Kotel HaMaravi, and of course, to the area around the Temple Mount. So I think that in terms of his position as the Waqf, he's ruled over a period of time when things have been kind of pretty good for Muslims in terms of having their access to the holy sites and having a rulership over the holy sites. We do know in the background, of course, is this this crisis that's erupted on the Temple Mount with regard to the Golden Gate, where the Muslims decided that they wanted to reopen the Golden Gate. We discussed that, I think, last week. Golden Gate has been closed since 2003, and all of a sudden, during the course of the last week or two, there's been a lot of attention brought upon the Golden Gate, with people trying to reopen the Golden Gate against the decision by the Israeli government, and indeed the High Court of Justice also ruled on this point. So the Golden Gate for the moment remains closed, and the Israeli police, of course, are policing that. They are securing that to make sure that the court's decision is implemented. But it has created a little bit of tension and some crisis on the Temple Mount. And of course, the king would have spoken about that as well during his meeting with the U.S. team. I'm sure also that the king would be talking about financial assistance for Jordan from the Israeli, from the U.S. administration, which is usually the main topic of his discussion when he goes to visit in Washington.
Mm. Anthony, I think it's also worth, worth remembering that between 1948 and 1967, when Jordan did control that section of Jerusalem, not only were Jews not allowed in to pray, but in fact, most of, the synagogues were destroyed during that time as well. So it wasn't just that they weren't allowed access to it, but in fact, their places of prayer were actually destroyed. Whereas from 1967, where Israel took control of that region, of Jerusalem, certainly there's free access to prayer, for everybody, and the various religions are very, very well protected in this region.
I think that's a fair point. I think when we say, you know, free access to prayer, some might point to the fact that the Israeli government does from time to time put restrictions on who may enter the Temple Mount area, the Al-Aqsa Mosque area, for Friday prayers. There are sometimes restrictions whereby men of a certain age who may cause any kind of violence are restricted from going onto the Temple Mount. And I think that, you know, we just need to understand that those restrictions are from a security perspective. And if things on the Temple Mount on Friday prayers in particular had gone smoothly in previous weeks and there had been no violence and no attempts to try and throw stones, as they often do, from the Temple Mount above onto the area of the Kotel below, if that sort of activity does not take place, then there are no restrictions. And the policy of the Israeli government is that all of the three main monotheistic religions who have their places of worship in Jerusalem should have access to their holy sites. And of course, what you're saying is correct, that not only did we not have access to our holy site, but indeed there was a lot of destruction during that period. And I'm pleased to say that much of that destruction has been rebuilt over the last few years since Israel has had control over Jerusalem. Some amazing developments in the old city of the renewal of holy sites in the old city of Jerusalem. Very much worth a visit for those people who are visiting Israel.
Absolutely. Trade teams from the U.S. and Israel are due to meet in the hope that a new U.S. policy towards the export of agricultural goods to Israel will not cause a rift in relations. Why are there changes being recommended by the U.S. trade team, Anthony?
Well, I mean, clearly the U.S. is Israel's biggest trading partner by far. Mm. It is three times larger in terms of exports than the second biggest trading partner being China. So clearly from an Israeli perspective, good trade relations with the U.S. is a very important point. Now, we do know that the U.S. has decided to revamp the way that duties in particular are applied to various goods that are imported from the United States to other markets around the world. This was initiated actually under the Obama administration to try to somehow reopen the free trade agreement with Israel, at least, that was signed back in 1985. And of course, we know that President Trump has been very determined to try to level the playing field for U.S. trade around the world. And we know, of course, that he's had a lot of bigger issues, bigger fish to fry than the trade agreement with Israel. But be that as it may, under the existing agreement that was signed back in 1985, virtually any product produced in Israel that can be competitive in the U.S. market is entitled to enter the U.S. market duty-free. And particularly here, we're talking about agricultural goods. And according to and so this is the way that things have happened up until the fact that they've now decided to reopen and to renegotiate this trade agreement. But on the other hand, there has been duty that has been extended to goods that are being agricultural goods that have been imported to Israel from the United States. And, you know, since the trade agreement was signed back in 1985, Israel's economic output has expanded by something like 13-fold. Wow. And so obviously the agricultural agreement particularly has to be revamped. And the talks apparently have now been ongoing for some time, and we expect that they will be wrapped up this week. And the question is whether the U.S. will insist upon reducing the duty on U.S. agricultural goods to Israel or not. The Israeli government, of course, is quite eager to impose duties, maybe some lower level of duty than has been the case up until now. From an Israeli consumer point of view, this would be a very, very welcome thing if the U.S. government actually succeeds in reducing the duties on U.S. agricultural goods, because Israelis, of course, have to pay those duties. The man in the street has to pay it on things that are bought, that are imported from the United States. And theoretically, that should then be passed on to the consumer in the street, and that we should be able to, we should be in a position to be able to purchase goods that are imported from the U.S. at cheaper prices. So it's going to be interesting to see whether there's some sort of a standoff as we reach the end of this trade agreement negotiation, or whether the man in the street ultimately will be the biggest beneficiary from all of this.
Interesting indeed. Finally, Israel's Mellanox has been acquired for $6.9 billion. That's the third highest price paid for any Israeli company. Why was Mellanox so attractive as an acquisition?
Well, Mellanox was acquired by American technology giant NVIDIA, Mellanox being a chip maker based in Yokneam, a company that's been going already for almost 20 years, listed on NASDAQ, and has been very much involved in the chip production and chip making in Israel, as indeed there are quite a number of companies in Israel that do that, not only Mellanox, but of course Intel has a huge facility here and many other Israeli companies that have done the same. But Israel has become quite well known over the past while for its chip making, and of course Mellanox has been one of the leading companies in that respect. And Mellanox clearly has managed to create a market position for itself, which made it hugely attractive for the likes of NVIDIA. In fact, NVIDIA wasn't the only company that was lining up to acquire Mellanox. There was actually quite a list of other companies that were also interested in bidding for Mellanox. Ultimately, NVIDIA was the big winner. And what's an interesting fact for me is that together, once NVIDIA and the Mellanox actually close the deal and the acquisition is finalized, the company, the combined company, will apparently power more than 250 of the world's top 500 most powerful supercomputers in terms of chips, computer chips that are powering these companies. And I think that that's an amazing achievement for an Israeli company to be so well entrenched in this sort of supercomputer area. That's really where Mellanox seems to have established its niche in powering some of the world's largest data centers and storage systems. And of course, we know that the world is moving more and more in that direction. More computer power all the time is required for the huge amount of electronic work that's been going on. And of course, Mellanox has positioned itself very, very well to take advantage of that market and has done well in doing so. Of course, the third largest, meaning that the largest acquisition ever was that of Mobileye, which was acquired by Intel not so long ago for around $15 billion. And the second largest acquisition was actually Israel's Frutarom, which is a producer of flavors and fragrances, and was bought for just over $7 billion. So 6.9, I think, is a very impressive figure indeed. And of course, we hope that Mellanox will continue to operate in Israel, even though NVIDIA has now agreed to acquire it. But I think this is an amazing achievement for Mellanox and, of course, for Israeli industry in general.
Absolutely. And certainly one wouldn't think that they would remove sort of the R&D from Israel. I mean, you see just a tremendous, tremendous amount of success. The whole country very much geared towards innovation and is groundbreaking on so many levels.
Yeah, I mean, Mellanox has been hugely influential in the Israeli industry in general, not only in the chip-making industry, but just around Israel in general, in terms of, you know, a company that's really well-established. It's not one of these new high-tech companies that's just been recently established. It's a company that's well-established, 20-odd years, really established an amazing marketplace, done very well for itself, for its shareholders, for the people who work there in Yokneam, and really very well known in Israel. And it's nice to see that it's not, you know, one of the kind of millennial new high-tech companies that's been around for 2-3 years and been acquired, which is really the trend that we've seen in Israel in recent years. This is a hugely established, well-established, well-known company around the world. And good luck to them. I think they've done an amazing job.
Absolutely. That's where we leave it, Anthony Reich. Thank you, as always. It is 8 o'clock. We'll catch up with Anthony same time, same place tomorrow for the latest news from Israel. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem, 101.9 Chai FM. It is 8 o'clock. Here's your news with Sanati.